Good morning. I'd like to reflect this morning on that first story in the Gospel, the story of Jesus being up country in what we'd now call Lebanon, and he meets a woman who's sometimes described as Canaanite, Syrophoenician, so she's not Jewish, and there's a scene. It's a disturbing story. The last time I heard it treated was Bishop Stephen at Archdeaconry meeting a year or so ago, who began with an oh-so-English apology, because it's a disturbing story. It's politically so incorrect. And yet this is Jesus. What's going on? I want to pick up two really big questions. I don't know about you, but when I get confused or I'm trying to work something out, I step back, try to get a bigger frame, try to get some huge sense of context. Because if I dive into the detail, oh, it just gets so complicated so quickly. I don't know, does anyone else recognize that for themselves? You know? Just ask yourself, well, what's happened in the last 500 years or something like that? So the two things that I'm going to sort of just dredge up before diving into the story is history. Does history have a plot? There's a big blue sky question. I was in a tutorial class when I was about 18. It was back in the Cold War. I had a classmate who was a Yugoslav. Very passionate guy, card-carrying Marxist. And this discussion come argument broke out in a history class tutorial whether history was just, well, this happens and that happens and then this happens and this happens and we just kind of muddle along. Or no, there is a theory of history and a grand scheme and an explanation. What is it? Is history just a series of accidents? And people get to write books about it? Or is there a plot, a thread? Is there providence? Is there a hand of God? Is it going somewhere? Is there an alpha and an omega? There you go, something to talk about this afternoon. Are we just muddling along? Hence, incidents and accidents, hints and allegations, as Paul Simon put it so well. That's one question. And the other question is, does everyone get the same deal, or are some people chosen? Does God have favorites, or is everyone at the same place with God? I'm just very aware we live in an egalitarian kind of mindset where everyone's supposed to get the same deal. Is it like that? Or are some chosen, favored, get a head start? So those are two questions standing right back. We'll just let them float and then we'll dive into the story. Jesus is a Jew. Big discovery of the 20th century. Honestly, it had been forgotten. A lot of people still haven't come to the party on this. He thought like a Jew. He behaved like a Jew. He was on a mission to the Jewish people, the people of Israel. But he ranged, and the world he lived in had been rearranged by various empires, the Assyrians, the Romans, the Greeks in particular. The Greeks were colonizers. There's a dirty word. They were colonizers. They planted cities. And in just on the eastern part of what's now Israel and into Jordan, they planted 10 cities known as the Decapolis. So that's the word we've heard in the passage. And Barbara and I have had the privilege of going to some of those cities because they're still standing. They're very well preserved. Architectural was it Jeresh we went to? Yeah. So the Greeks had planted their cities where people would live in a Greek way in the Jewish setting. And there were remnants of the Phoenicians just a little way up country in Lebanon. Phoenicians were people who'd come from also the Greek region, the Aegean Sea. They were sea peoples, and they planted themselves around the Mediterranean. So it was, Israel was always in an interesting neighborhood. It was interesting then. And Jesus traveled and met the neighbors. Now it's often said he spoke Aramaic. He probably spoke some Greek too, because it was about, you know. We don't have this experience much in New Zealand, but in Europe, you know, you travel a few kilometers and the language changes. So if you want to talk to the neighbors, learn the lingo. It's just how many people operate, and Jesus was like that. And he tries to keep a low profile, the story tells us, but word gets out. Even without internet and phone, word news travels fast. And there's a woman whose daughter has an unclean spirit. Something about this girl that is deeply disturbing. It's of a spiritual nature. She needs a spiritual man, a spiritual person to address this. And she knows that Jesus is in the neighborhood. He has this reputation, so she goes for him and begs him to cast out the demon of her daughter. I had a situation like this once. It was a still summer wine, wasn't it? Summer wine camp in Taupo about 1997, 98. And because I'm an ordained priest, I'm supposed to know about everything. So I'm put in charge of lots of things. I'm in a tent, and at the end of this meeting, the tent flap goes up, and a group of people are carrying a girl of about 8 or 9 in who is hysterical. She is crying beyond what you think would be not humanly possible. She is highly, highly distressed. She was carried from the children's venue a few hundred yards away by a group of people, because she was so upset, and they brought her into the space I was in for prayer ministry. She needs prayer. So suddenly, like I said, the tent flap goes up, there's this situation. And it's taken to me, because like I said, I'm a priest, I'm supposed to know about all these things. And my first prayer is, God, what on earth is this? No idea. And I remember her being laid down. She was hysterical. And I remember an older guy, looked a bit like you, Pete, and he was really trying to calm her down and assure her. What's that?
Just a young fella.
Yellow young fella. Okay, you're in your prime. And he was assuring her and being very gentle. And I stood back just to meet her, a bit like I do all the time. I stood back and I thought, Lord, I have no idea. What is going on here? And I heard one word in my spirit, one word, grandmother. Oh. So her mother was with her, and you can imagine it's you know, a child that is hysterical and out of control, eyes and teeth and tongue flashing. So I said, grandmother, what's happening? She says, well, this is the situation. She says, her daughter has, in the last 6 months, deteriorated. And what's happened was she was a normal, outgoing, school-going girl, and her world just closed down to the point where she only lived in her bedroom. And there was no diagnosis for us. There was no understanding. But I said, okay, grandmother. She says, oh, her grandmother died 6 months ago. Okay. So I have a few dots to consider. I don't know how I prayed, but I prayed into this, because something had entered into her life, a around the situation and taken hold and literally was squeezing the life out of her. She was distressed. And I tell the story because it resonates with the story we read here in Mark's Gospel. So I prayed a deliverance prayer. She calmed down and she was walked out of the tent. 6 months later, I keep saying 6 months, I got a letter from the family saying that she had gradually started to expand her life again to the point where she went to school again. And so they were very, very grateful. And the following summer, I saw her again and she was bounding along like a normal Kiwi kid in the summer. So why do I tell all this? Well, like I said, it resonates. This is real. Especially in an age where there's high suspicion over this and these things are recategorized as something else. But here was a mother with a daughter who, yeah, the way I colloquially say, something was squeezing the life out of her. She wasn't able to be the girl that she was made and meant to be. And then this gets politically very incorrect. And Jesus says things that, like I said, caused Bishop Stephen to apologize. Because she's begging for the demon to come out of the daughter. Let the children be fed first, for it is not fair to take the children's food and throw it to the dogs. Now, we live in a culture, I sometimes take photos for my friends and relatives in Europe of youths with 4 or 5 dogs in the back. It's a real local thing. It's like, you don't see that in every part of the world, you know? So dogs have their place here. In a lot of the world, dogs are dirty. They are, you know, to call someone a dog is to really to defile them. It's like pigs, dogs, apes. That's kind of language to defame people with. And so this woman is saying, yeah, when good things are happening, even dogs, and she's referring to herself, us who are considered lowly, unworthy of respect and consideration, we get the crumbs. And in the original language, it's little dogs. We would say doggy. Maybe they couldn't put doggy into the King James, it didn't sound right, but it's that sort of little mutt pooch that scrounges around people's feet for morsels that fall off the table. And it's contrast with the children. The children sit at table and the dogs scavenge for what they could get. And Jesus says, don't take the children's food and give it to the dogs. And she says, oh, well, even the dogs get the old crumb. Now, if anyone has any shred of woke sensitivity, just breathe calmly now. Because this is, you know, if Radio New Zealand were dissecting this, this is racism, sexism, I don't know, something else as well. Jesus is saying the things of God are for the children of God. And you ain't, you know, you're dogs. That's the situation. And she accepts that. She's not fighting that assessment. She doesn't come back and say, whoa, what about my rights? You know, we're all children of God. You mount a counter argument. She doesn't. She says, well, even the dogs get the crumbs. Smart woman. You know, determined woman. And a woman of faith. Because she's got her eyes focused on the fact that this Jew can set her daughter free. She wants that. She's not letting go of that. That's her faith. Jesus had another conversation with a woman at a well, another non-Jewish woman. It's in John chapter 4, I think. The Samaritan woman. Long conversation. And in the course of it, he says to her, salvation is from the Jews. It's the same mindset. It's the same reality. So what I'm drawing out here is how Jesus understood it, how non-Jews understood it, that the favor of God was, and his purpose was being worked out through the Jewish people. And that's in contrast to the sort of expectation a lot of people have, is that, well, God has one deal for all people because God's fair and there's one dispensation and it's rolled out universally for all comers. Well, you can choose to believe that. What I'm sticking my neck out to say is the Bible doesn't, and Jesus doesn't. So, I'll have to step back a bit further maybe. In Genesis chapter 12, God calls Abraham. And he calls Abraham to make him a family and then a nation, and to have a people to himself. He makes a people. There is no people. He makes a people. And then when this people are caught up in Egypt, he rescues a people for his purpose. And the English sort of dry wit comment on this is, how odd of God to choose the Jews. It's not to deny it, but it's curious. You think of all the other ways God could have worked to reach humanity, but he chose to work by choosing someone. And it raises what scholars refer to as the scandal of particularity. The scandal of particularity as opposed to generality. Another example of this, feminist theologians in the 80s and the 90s, some of them had problems with the fact that Jesus was a man. He had to be something. They hadn't even invented fluid gender then, but I don't know what's been made of it now. But Jesus had to be something. He couldn't be a nothing, hold the space empty, undefined. And as soon as you make something something, well, woke hadn't been invented until recently, but someone's going to be annoyed, someone's going to be left out, someone's going to be offended. God doesn't seem to have a problem with that. He doesn't seem to have a problem. He chooses. He makes choices. Chris, you've probably been through a few airport securities lately. And do you notice they're not all the same?
Yes.
Right. So here's the big contrast. In the West, kind of where we have to be sort of politically correct, everyone gets the same deal. So as I read it, the 80-year-old Irish nun going through O'Hare Airport, Chicago, gets the same treatment as the highly suspect person. Same, you know, frisking, scanning, all that sort of thing. That's the same one-size-fits-everyone deal, because politically, that's what you need. I went through Ben Gurion Airport in June, and I've been looking forward to this because I've been reading about this for years. Totally different approach. They profile you. Are you profiling me? Yes, I am. And they just start asking questions. And some people are questioning for 10, 15 minutes, and others, it just takes a few minutes, got it sorted, who is. So I got about 5 minutes of intense eyeball-to-eyeball inquiry. Why was I traveling alone? Why did I only have one bag? Where was my journey going? And it's rapid-fire questions, seeing if you trip. I'm just saying there are different ways of going about it. God's way of going about things is to choose and to call someone. And that by implication means a whole lot of other someones are not called, are not chosen. By the time of Isaiah chapter 49, the awareness had come that Israel was a light to the nations, was called to be a light to the nations, that God's purpose in this calling of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, and his dealing with this people, and consequently this nation, was for a purpose for all the nations. Now I'm going to get really kind of bring it into the 21st century. It seems that God's still doing that, because the people of Israel, the descendants of Abraham, are still with us. It's still happening. They're still among the nations. And this purpose hasn't finished. It hasn't rolled out. And the promises that God made to Abraham are still current, are still valid. Now, that's, for a lot of people, quite an uncomfortable thought. Google is telling Ross, get me out of here. This is rooted here in Jesus. It's rooted in the scriptures. It's having a bad technology moment. And I find this really important in terms of trying to understand history, where we are, and what is happening on the global scene. Because the people of God recognize that God chooses the people. Doesn't mean they're all right. Just read about Abraham. Abraham went and lied and messed up and lost the plot, all sorts of things. But he remained chosen. It wasn't a sort of, he is the good guy forevermore. In fact, the whole Bible is full of people like that. God chooses them, they mess up. And that's recorded. It's not erased from the record. It's kept there. And I see that very much in his choice of the Jewish people. They are his choice. Do they get everything right all the time? No, they mess up, they forget who they are, they go off track, they come back on track. Biblical history is still playing out. But for us, the important thing is, it's God's choice. He has declared it, he has set it out. And this instance, this morning, Jesus is resonating with that. God gives food to his children. And they are a specific group. In Jesus Christ, of course, that would be universalized. And the whole point of Christianity is taking, as it were, Judaism to the nations. Paul puts it this way: we are grafted on to the rootstock of Israel. We are grafted on. What disturbs me so often as a gardener is that Christianity has often acted as if the graft can live alone without the rootstock. It can't. It doesn't work that way. So my own reflection, and this is just my reflection, what I've been saying so far is I think, biblically very grounded. My own reflection is the grand theme of history, the red line that runs through history, is God reaching out to the world and the world fighting back. God reaching out to the world is creation, and the world fighting back. And I look at every major development in history, there it is, There it is. And we seem to be in a phase where, well, we've been in it for centuries, but it's really sharp at the moment, where the people of Israel are in the center of that. It doesn't mean that the people of Israel are beyond critique or get everything right all the time. But glory be, the world is at war with God through that situation. Through that situation. If you step back a bit and think about the Second World War, what was that all about? The whole world caught up in this massive conflict. 20 million people supposedly lost their life. What was that about? Was that nation states squabbling over borders and territory, or was it about trade, as Lenin would say, or was it about male ego gone crazy? We have Anzac Day every year, and people bring statements of significance to the experience, but actually, what was it all about? In my own mind, it was all about the Jewish people, annihilating them. That was the plot. That was the plot. And I'll tell you two things that point to that. One is, on the very day that Adolf Hitler declared war in 1939, he spent most of that day making arrangements for what was going to happen to the Jews. And by the end of the war, the German train system, most of it was going to transporting Jews. And the German generals on the Eastern Front were complaining, we're not getting material, our materials aren't coming through. Why? Because the train traffic was being used to go to Auschwitz. Just facts of history. The Allies knew this at the time. They had records of German train movements. So that was a bit of nitty-gritty there, but it's just making this point that the world actually runs on a dynamic between God's reaching out and the world fighting back. It's what the cross was. God reaches out in Christ, brings his son as a light to the nations, as Israel in one. And what does the world do? Splat. Deconstructs him every which way it can on a cross. So I offer this as a reference in a very confusing time. And hopefully I ground this in an incident, a story from Jesus. God's love comes through particular channels. It comes worked through people and situations of his choice. And if we don't recognize that, we're not with the plot. So this woman, her persistence, yes, we're just little doggies, we're nibbling around the edges, but there is an overflow of grace and love for us too. And Jesus is so impressed with us, as he is with the Roman centurion and the Samaritan woman. He's so impressed with us that he reaches out and extends. And he is a light to the nations. He is a blessing to the Gentiles. And I don't know why it is, but he goes on from this region to the Decapolis, another region which is populated by non-Jews, and he reaches out to heal a deaf, mute person. I hope this brings some way of understanding what is happening in history. and that it's not just a succession of wars, deals, trade arrangements, sports events, and such like. There is actually a thread at work, and the Omega is in God's hands. Amen.